What's happening, guys? Happy Friday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. Ian Garry versus Michael Venom Page. There is a lot on that. One thing that makes big fights, right? As a matter of fact, a top ingredient that is missed by nearly every promoter, and even a fan. Even a fan doesn't know that this is something that draws them, right? I'll hear the fan, if you, the fan, are ever finding yourself repeating what the bosses told you, you should know right there you're going down the wrong road, right? Like, it's styles that make fights. I want to see excitement. I want to see knockouts. I just bleed, like, whatever it is. There is not a huge anticipation for that. And nothing keeps the lights on in this industry more than anticipation. You can't be interested and have fun and have that big rush after it ended. You got to buy it ahead of it. You got to get the ticket before the event or we don't have an industry. So it's very important. But when you're doing a big fight, and I just don't want you guys to miss this. When you have a big fight, there's a discrepancy in careers based on outcome. The bounce that one guy could get, but also the drop that the other guy could have. That discrepancy is what creates for the big fights. Well, it's presented to you as wonderful resumes, and somebody's O must go, and this is a number one contendership. This is a title fight. Well, it's presented to you when you're gobbling up what you don't know about yourself is the big fights that you enjoy have that potential discrepancy where not only can somebody really cheer and pump their fists in the air on the shoulders of their corner man, but the other guy is going to hang his head and not know what his next move is. That's when you have the real interesting fights. It has nothing to do with styles, just so you understand. Nothing to do with records. Nothing to do with rankings. Now, I bring you that because MVP and Garry, how did we get here? What an interesting match. Right after 299, MVP got done and had the match with Kevin Holland. And it was panned. And over here at Bad Guy Inc., we had a very different opinion. We enjoyed that match and understood some of the problems with the distance and how you're going to handle it for both guys. Saw some of the tactical elements, not to mention MVP found a way to win in his debut. Historically, for anybody not named Justin Gaethje, your debut is not a good performance. Even if you win, even if you get the outcome, the performance is down for a variety of reasons. Okay, so one of the matches that we suggested over here was MVP versus Ian Garry. Now, it didn't look like there was going to be legs to that because Colby looked as though he was going to do business with Garry. And the problem you had with MVP is nobody wanted to face him. And not only was that public, but we're told that that's behind the scenes as well. And I would believe it. That is a really weird style. It's a very, very tough draw. And you also face two opponents when you take him on. Like, you've tried to get the jump on him. But then in this industry, you're also trying to be exciting. And if you get the jump and get your hand raised, but you didn't satisfy that, right? Do you see where it becomes a little bit of a problem? Like the blueprint that you would have in your mind to beat MVP, you're probably right. Being able to go out and execute it is a whole nother thing. But the game plan that you would have. Guys used to do this with Jimmy Manoa. Well, here's how you beat him and here's all you have to do. It's like, yeah, okay, great. I don't disagree with you, but go do it, right? Go get through the strikes that dude's going to put on you when he's out there fearless and fighting anybody. I mean, I'm just suggesting to go to Garry, to go to our undefeated, a decade younger, hottest prospect. Is Garry the hottest prospect at 170? If you were trying to make money, if you're a promoter, and the only way you can monetize any of these athletes is with their performance. That's the only commodity they have. Do you see a prospect at 170 that you could make more money with? And I don't mean right now, today. I'm talking about over the course of things, right? Shelf life, where he's going to go, potential champion, moving into main events. So to put that hot of an item, who, by the way, had the whole community talking about a different opponent. I'm talking about Gary versus Colby. To put the brakes on all of that and to bring him in against a 36-year-old Michael Venom Page, who on a bad night won. Like, it's a, how did we get here? And thank goodness we are. But what happens to Gary when I talk about that discrepancy? He beats MVP, the guy that nobody wants to fight. Gary's going to have to do one of two things. Not maybe. He's going to have to do one of two things. He's going to have to outstrike the guy that nobody can outstrike, or Gary's going to have to show us an ability to grapple that he hasn't yet shown. If he's got great wrestling abilities, he hasn't shown them yet. He's done his work on his feet. But a lot of the guys will do that until they can't get him down, right? Like George St. Pierre, he wrestled everybody down. And then he runs into Matt Hughes. He can't take him down. He throws a head kick and we start to see the expansion. So that in and of itself is very fascinating. The fact that Gary, who people like to give a hard time to in the media, has agreed to take on the guy that nobody else will fight. Gary deserves credit for that. Lots. MVP, whose fight was panned, who, by the way, I'm saying he's 36 years old. He could be 37. And I'm just sharing, like, that's one of the upper echelons to take up and preserve main card TV time. So if MVP was to get a win over Gary and knock him off, I mean, that would really catapult him. That would just be incredible. But if he was to lose, he wouldn't be guaranteed that his next fight would be televised. I'm trying to talk about the gap and one of the reasons that that match is so interesting. Then when you get into the X's and O's, just how good is Gary on his feet? Like, it's really hard to know. I think perhaps he showed his best understanding of the sport and being able to take on a phenomenal athlete in his fight with Jeff Neal. It was a very close fight. One thing with Gary is he does always beat guys with the punches and the kicks, right? He beats them in the stand-up. And it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing to take on MVP. I would love to know how Gary's preparing. I would love to know who he's preparing with. There's only been a couple of guys in the history of the sport where you get one crack at them. Because there's nobody else that can come in and mimic them. I would put Machida in that category. I would put Wonderboy in that category. And I would put MVP in that category. And I do think that the winner of that fight is going to have something very promising in front of him. But the other side of the coin, when we talk about Gary and being undefeated and having this big shelf life, being a top-ranked guy and being handsome and being brash, the other side of the coin is it's very hard to explain to the audience how you lost to a 36-year-old. Who do you think's going to win that fight, by the way, guys? Who do you think wins that fight? I can all but assure you, when that goes off, DraftKings will have Gary as the favorite. But it's going to be close. It's going to be a line that moves. And there's not going to be anybody that bet on Gary that is relaxed when that match happens. It is a fantastic booking by the UFC. Islam Makhachev, this is a tough position. He really is in a tough spot. Do you guys think he's a star, by the way? Like, do you feel that? Because I have a feeling most of you are going to say no. Ah, he's really good. He's great. You know, he needs the right opponent. He needs just a little bit more time, a little more charisma, a few more interviews. I have a feeling you're going to say that. But I stumbled across one of his social medias. I can't remember if it was Instagram or if it was Twitter. He had 8.9 million followers. I could not believe this. I remember the time when Dana got to a million And this was way back. This is like, you know, 2009. It was just started up, but I'm just sharing. Dana could like send a text, hey, come see me at the such and such mall and I'll give two tickets. It would be like a joke how fast he would be absolutely swarmed. And that was at a million. So there's parts of the world. There's populations. Ariel had named Khabib, and I believe it to be true because Ariel said it, the most popular Muslim athlete in the world. And I share this with you because the idea that Islam isn't a star, I believe, could be a North American phenomenon. So let's deal with that, though. It's a North American company. You guys are largely a North American audience. Let's just look at it from your perspective. What would Islam need to do? And can he do it at 155? I do believe that Islam right now, like the talks of UFC 300, it's going to be Islam versus Leon. Not to mention the double champ status, but just like the X's and O's of that match, we found out how great Leon was when he took on Colby. We found out how great his wrestling was. I just think that that would have been a very compelling match. And I think I could probably suggest for you other very compelling matches at 170. The question is, can he do it at 155? And he finds himself in a tough position. John Jones had to be in this same position, which was so good and so dominant, he was having a hard time selling out arenas. People just knew how it was going to end. You back the tape up, Roy Jones Jr., the best boxer of the 90s, not according to Chael, according to boxers from the 90s, unanimously. You will not find any publication that lists the boxer of the 90s to be anybody other than Roy Jones. And he never had the mega fights. Even you boxing fans, you know who Roy Jones is, but if I was to ask you, tell me a title that he held, you're likely to say something clever like all of them. All right, well, tell me one guy that he fought. You might be able to come up with it. You might be able to look back and go, okay, I actually remember. Okay, give me a second. Okay, but now let me combine the two. Who did he fight and for what title? And you're going to be stuck. And that's not a knock on you or a knock on Roy. It was a reality that he was so good, he never had that big fight. Never. He never had that $20 million payday. And people liked him, and he was talented. He had Nike behind him. He could rap a little bit like Roy was an entertainer. And he was so damn good, it hindered his earnings. Not his reputation, not his accomplishments, not his ability to get title fights. Not the hardware that he was able to collect in the form of belts and medals and trophies. But it did affect the zeros and the commas because it was a story people felt they already knew the ending to. I'm old enough to remember a time when Mike Tyson was stopping everybody in the very first round. And there was a few things going on there, but they still had to solve the problem. Like, DirecTV still has to solve the problem, which is we have business and we need to sell this guy. And he's so good and the opponent is not compelling or believable enough. What are we going to do? And they came out and I remember it was a joint interview with the president of DirecTV and Don King, and they told the world, if Mike stops this next guy in the first round, we will refund half of your pay-per-view purchase. So all of a sudden, though, they've added an element, right? That's just good, solid marketing right there. That is very clever marketing to the fact that this was at least 30 years ago, and I remember it. What marketing do you remember from 30 years ago? It had to be pretty damn good. And I say that because there's other ways to go with Islam. Like, there is a constant debate of Islam Khabib. And it gets headlines. It gets clicks. Islam gets asked about it, refuses. Khabib gets asked about it. They're very polite. Like, there's no interfering with that relationship. Javier Mendez has to speak about it. Daniel Cormier, Luke Rockhold, right? The guys that were in the gym all get asked about it. And I do think that there's a story there. And this might be a little bit clumsy, right? Like, I've got a hold of the right tool, possibly by the wrong end. But I think there is some comparisons to make with Khabib anytime you start to run into a common opponent, of which Dustin Poirier is. So now all of a sudden, it's not just a matter of beating him. Like, if that's the story and that's what's hurting, that's what everybody knows is going to happen. Well, now you not only got to do it, you got to do it inside 7.5 minutes. And I think that it adds to it. I think it was interesting when Mike, as opposed to stopping a guy early, had to stop him later, or else there was a punishment and a reward to you, the audience. Like, that just becomes interesting. Well, I'm telling you that I remember the DirecTV president and Don King standing there and going to the media over and over and over and bringing this pitch. I don't remember who Mike was fighting. I don't remember who the opponent was. Between Bruce Seldon and I know McNeely was the first one back out of prison. Like, I don't know who the opponent was, but I remember the pitch. And it adds a pressure. It's extremely unfair to Islam. Not the point. I'm asking you, how do you draw and how do you sell them? What other competitions are happening within the competition? If you're so sure that you know the outcome of a unified mixed martial arts rules match between Islam and Dustin, if you're so sure of that, let's add a competition. Let's add a layer to it. Islam is in a spot if he wants to make waves. I don't think that he does. He seems like the definition of a gentleman. But I've also never heard Islam ask for anything aside from new opponents. When he was going into the fight with Volkanovski the second time, like, oh my goodness. You know, hard fight for one, no denying, but I already gave him the opportunity. He's coming up from a weight class, man. I want that same opportunity. I like to go up a weight class. There's all sorts of guys for me to fight. Please give me some new guys. And when it was comeback, no, you're going to fight this guy. No problem. Signed right away. Didn't bicker about it. And that's a significant difference, right? Asking for new blood once the offer's been made or the request is put in, it's significantly different than doing that in the media, trying to encourage it to go in a second direction. But when that phone rings, you say yes and you put it down, regardless of what name comes out of the promoter's mouth. It's very different. And that's what Islam did. But, and there is a but, which is, it appears that Armand Sakarian, now, in this industry, things change fast. But it appears that Armand Sakarian will be the next opponent for Islam should Islam beat Dustin. And should Dustin get the jump on Islam, it still appears that Sakarian will be next. I would go a little bit further for you. I would imagine they have a backup fighter for this event. I don't know that it's Sakarian, but I'm very confident that Sakarian will be there. He will be in the front row. They're planning a cameo, perhaps an organic face-off. The point being, if it is Islam versus Sakarian, that would be the one qualification that Islam asked to not have to meet, which is a rematch. And I would not predict for you that he's going to be the skunk at the garden party that says, no, I'm going up, here's the belt, thank you, F you, bye. But it'd be very hard to not give a guy something when you're continually giving him the only thing that he said he doesn't want. And it would make waves, and that would be interesting. And that would be a headline-worthy threat. So we'll see where that goes. But I suggest for you, before you think Islam is so great that it's not worth tuning in, it's not just Islam versus his opponent. There's other things being chased here. And that's where it becomes very relevant that he has an interest in going to 170 pounds and achieving champ status. That's one thing that Khabib didn't do. That's one thing that would separate them to a degree. It's one thing that would be looked at. It's one thing that is perhaps a motivation. and it hasn't been touched on, but there's a lot of competitions within this match. And you gotta look a little bit, but if you do, you'll see them. UFC 302 is bringing the Octagon back to Newark for the 10th time, and you do not want to miss out on any of the action over at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. It's a stacked card with lightweight, middleweight, and welterweight matchups all set to take place in the Octagon. New to DraftKings? Listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just make a minimum deposit of $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back in the amount of your original bet if the first bet doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code CHAEL. That's code CHAEL, C-H-A-E-L, for new customers, and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500 if your first bet doesn't hit. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See DKNG.co/MMA for eligibility, wagering, and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chale, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chale, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chale. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/chael. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chael, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chael. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. All right, guys, now we're joined by a guest who is always welcome and seldomly available, but Douglas Crosby is with us. Douglas, do I got you?
Hey, fella, how are you?
It is nice to hear your voice. I mean that sincerely. What is going on?
You too. I'm sorry I can't do the video portion of this. I'm on a set, and that's the intellectual property of somebody else. Even the color of the paint on the walls is somebody else's property, so probably best we just do it audio wise, but you're better looking than me anyway, and they know what you look like, so they don't really need to see me.
I will take that compliment.
How are things going with you, handsome? How's it going?
Well, it's going very good. I've got to tell you, at all times, I'm having an emotion right now, and I'm feeling same thing that I recognize because I feel it each time I have you on, which is I don't totally know what we can talk about. You know, Douglas, we don't hear from judges. We don't hear from referees often, to the point that I might even say ever. And I'm going to include boxing in that. I can't remember. So then I feel like I am not supposed to ask you certain things, or you can't go down certain roads. But I'm curious, like your state and your opinion of MMA, of boxing. In fact, here, let me kick you off with this. As an administrator, but also as a viewer, let me kick you off with this. Did you see that Mike Tyson was taken off an airplane with medical personnel, and he's supposed to fight in 1 month? What are your thoughts?
I did see that. Somebody texted me that, and that's interesting. And I'm an official, not an administrator, but it's kind of splitting hairs there. But I know someone also told me that you had been talked to about, or at least contacted about, being the backup for Tyson on that. So I think I hope Mike's okay. You know, I hate flying probably as much as Mike Tyson does. Thankfully, I've never had to get taken off a plane, but I just hate flying. And I can understand anybody feeling uncomfortable flying. So maybe he's fine.
Yeah.
But if he isn't, that let's see how that works out. You know, I'm sure wherever they're fighting has top flight physicians and professionals in the commission who will make sure that he is 100% safe in the fight, if they can. And if not, you see what happens. But what about you? Like, you're going to fight Anderson Silva again? Have you gotten tired of beating him yet?
Oh, my goodness. That's great. No, I haven't. And I don't know if it's as competitive based or ego based. Like, mm-hmm. I will share with you, I did not feel that saying no to the match was an option. And the other
it's kind of like the second and third time they offered you fights with Jeremy Horn. I mean, you'd already climbed the mountain and beaten him, but I guess you had some urge to beat him over and over again. So
yeah, it was,
hey,
one
God
of those
bless
things.
You for that. I mean, that's one of those things. You got that eye of the tiger in you, fella.
I appreciate that. That's great. Hey, there was a boxing match. Can I tell you why I bring up Tyson? Douglas,
yeah, sure.
There was a boxing match. And I'm only going to get you partway there. Like, I didn't see this, but I read about it. And there was a boxing match recently. This was only a couple of months ago. And the referee had stopped the fight what people believed to be very early. And the referee spoke about it after. And he said, you know what? There's something within this athlete's medical that I knew about, and therefore I used it to protect him. Now, I don't weigh an opinion on that. The reason I bring it to you, that's one of the few times ever that I've heard a judge and or official speak. I'm actually going back to my original point to you, which is I get scared of what to ask you. I don't know what you're allowed to talk about. I don't know what you're comfortable with.
Well, in between the time we had our last conversation and now, there appears to have been something of a sea change in the way the administrators perceive officials having conversations with the media. And there are still some administrators who don't want officials to do it, but there's some administrators who welcome it, recommend it, suggest it, and even have members of the media on the phone calls that they have with all the officials in real time. And that's now that's a level of transparency and accountability that you only get from progressive administrators. So it's I think it's changed a bit in that regard, at least as far as I can ascertain from what I've heard from the administrators, that there is a certain change in opinion on that. So but so here I am, you know.
Yeah, all right. So my observation is that not incorrect. That when I tell you that I don't see many interviews with judges and or referees, like that's encouraged behind the scenes. Hey guys, keep it down. Am I close?
By some administrators, but yeah, not by others. And there is no one standard for it. And this is, MMA administration should be about standards. But at this point, there really is no standard for that as far as talking to the media or not.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so it's Olympic year. I don't follow sports super close, NBA and NFL. I'm an Olympic fan, so I only get to have a good time every 4 years. But with that in mind, I have a coach that has refereed, and he's refereed his whole entire life. I'm just talking about the sport of amateur wrestling. And he would like to get to the Olympics. Like, as a judge and official, that would be just as exciting for him as for the athletes that go. And there's a point system. There's a point system for all the matches that he ever referees that goes into a database against other judges and referees from around the world. Okay, now... Mm-hmm. The reason I tell you that, is there anything like that with an MMA? Like when I see you that's always doing co-main events and title fights, is that because you're a long-standing judge or does that get drawn randomly?
Well, it kind of goes back to the point I made about standards, which is that are there standards for the officials? What are they? But I don't have the answer for that. Although I've asked that question of administrators, I've never gotten an answer on that. My questions were, is there a system for rating the officials? What is the system? Who came up with the system? Who keeps track of it? And how do you rank the officials? And those are pretty fair questions.
Sure.
But when I talk about regulation, each individual state or administration, whether it's a state administration or part of a tribal administration or whatever, has their own official, has their own administrator. And is there some rubric as far as the judges that they all are in agreement on? I don't know, but I have no evidence that there is. I've never been presented with any evidence that there is. So I don't want to sound evasive. I've been accused of that by other people on when I go on your podcast. And it's not really intentional. It's that I don't want to give information that's not accurate. Is there a rubric for who are the best judges? I don't know. Should there be? Yes. Should it be transparent and available? Yes. Should it be something that includes the opinions of people who analyze data for a living and build systems where information becomes intelligence? Yes, but I don't know if it's being done or if it has been done.
Sure.
And the people I've asked haven't given me an answer on it. It does bring up the issue, though, is if you are ranked one of the better judges and then you are a fighter and you don't get one of the better judges for your fight, if you're supposed to be giving equal levels of professionalism to each combatant, each contestant. Why would one fighter be comfortable, happy with a judge who is rated lower than another judge? Or do you say, well, all the judges are identical and equal in their rating? Okay, well, what was the rating system you used to determine that? Either way, what was the rating system you used to determine Judge A is better than Judge B, or are Judge A and Judge B identical and interchangeable? And if so, how did you come to that conclusion? Like, that's the type of thing that's an evidence-based argument would be needed for any of this. But I don't have any evidence for it.
I've often had these same thoughts. I'm sorry to cut you off there. I've often had these same thoughts. You know, if I go back to my example of wrestling, when I talk about who gets a higher judge and what database this goes into and who analyzes that, it might surprise, without even the audience not even having to know how to score a wrestling match, they might be surprised that there's three referees for a wrestling match. So if there's an offering of a score, the score goes to popular opinion, meaning if two referees hold up 2 points and the other referee holds up 4 points, popular opinion, it's 2 points. What goes against a referee in this database is how many times he was not the popular opinion. Mm-hmm. And my problem with that right off the bat is because it's popular doesn't make it so. And I just find that to be a mistake where many of us can stand back and I could tell you confidently, I would not because I think it would be rude, but I could tell you very confidently who our best referees are. And people would disagree with me. I don't know what the numbers would be. I don't know what the database would say because I don't know how that's analyzed. But I could do the same thing with the judges. But I don't know if the database would say that. But Douglas, I wouldn't stop there. I could do the same thing with the fighters. You could take a group of fighters, and I don't need you to show me how many punches they landed or what their record is or how they did in their last X amount of fights. I could look at the group and tell you, these guys are the main event. These guys are going to open the show. And everyone between the people, they wouldn't disagree with me. And I just share that with you because I feel like within some of these databases, we're getting a confusion. And moreover, we've never been told what the algorithm is.
Well, you're correct on that. And that is something that you really need to think about. And you have, which is great. But I think everybody might want to give that some thought, which is exactly how is the data being used? How is it being collected? Who's analyzing it? And what are the motives of the people who are analyzing it? Whatever you're talking about, whether you're talking about car tires or anything, whatever data sample you have to take a look at how it was collected, what was the aim of its collection, and how it's being used, by who and why. And one of the issues, though, is you can kind of reverse engineer data to support whatever you want to do anyway, most of the time. Like if you've got judges as an administrator, if you've got judges that you're comfortable with and confident in, you can, and you've got the access to all the information, you can use the data however you want. You can portray it however you want. You know, that's part of something called the gambler's fallacy, which is, I remember once years ago, I was in some intellectual think tank and someone made a recommendation for personnel and everybody else went against that because the numbers didn't support it. And this individual's argument in favor of his decision was, well, he's due. As if using the argument that he had done badly in the past as an argument to promote him because he'd already gotten all of his mistakes out of the way. And that's one of the problems with, it's great to have the data, but you got to figure out what's the aim of collecting it, who's collecting it, what are they going to do with it once they have it? And as far as MMA officials go, I don't really have the answer for that.
You know, Douglas, Ronda Rousey did an interview and it was just yesterday. And it was, and she talked about, I don't know if I would go to an MMA fight. I feel if I went, they'd put the camera on me, and I think the audience would boo. And her entire career, she's been in a spot to pretend I don't care. To pretend I don't care if they're cheering or booing. That's the business. And this interview was a little different because she finally said, you know what? Aside from that, I am a human being, and I do care. And the reason I tell you that I could tie that in to when I was a little kid and the girl whose attention I wanted, instead of telling her hello, I would tease her in some way just to get a reaction.
Sure.
I feel as though the audience does that to our officials, to our judges like you, to our referees, trying to get them to speak. More than anything, just trying to get a response. And I have seen your name in the same categories as Ronda, where people are coming out and they're being intentionally nasty just to get a response. Mm-hmm. And until yesterday, Ronda has never given it to them. And until right this moment, you've never given it to them. On a human level, can you relate with Ronda on a human level? Okay, this is what I'm supposed to do, and I'm going to toe the line, but I'm a human being, and you're saying things about me I don't like.
Well, with me, I've got a very demanding job, which requires me to do what's right rather than necessarily do what's best for me when it comes to the film business. I have to ensure everybody's safety. And sometimes that means that will put you in a position where people have invested a great amount of capital, whether that's financial capital or intellectual capital or emotional capital, will get upset when something, when some type of circumstance comes up where safety has to be the most important thing. So as far as me being personally upset or somehow feel hurt by any comments about me, that would be, I would have to answer that in the negative. With that said, however, I think it's very important that we start to take a look critically and realistically about the world we live in and how the way the officials are treated by a very small minority of vocal people in the sport could lead to violence. And this is as much an issue for the administrators as anybody, which is that if you have officials you believe in and you trust them to do the job, and then someone calls those officials incompetent or worse, corrupt, and you as an administrator, your response to that is silence. You do not defend your officials who travel to the events, put their own names on the scorecards, and then go back into their regular lives and have people call them incompetent or corrupt with no evidence of either. And if you're an administrator and you don't respond to that, then you are creating an environment for your officials that is less safe than it should be. Now think about this for a second, that years ago, maybe 10 years ago up in Wisconsin, do you remember there's something called the Slender Man case?
Yes.
Okay, so two juveniles.
Girls. Girls, right? Wasn't it two girls out in the woods?
Yeah, attacked their friend with knives and tried to kill her to satisfy a fictitious character named Slenderman that had been created on a website. Didn't even exist. And they tried to kill their own friend so they could go live in a castle in a magic forest with Slenderman. And then you say to yourself, well, the extension of that is how far away are we from someone who may or may not have lost his house on an MMA fight becoming convinced that the officials were somehow against him with no evidence? Now, the officials aren't Slenderman. They're real human beings with real home addresses that have been published and put out on the internet by people. How removed are we from someone delusional or in some way mentally compromised becoming aggressive or violent towards MMA officials? Like, think about this too. John Anik put out something on his own social media advocating for violence against officials. Now, in the case of him, it was a baseball umpire, but the baseball umpire had apparently transgressed against the Tao of Anik as far as how he had conducted himself as a baseball umpire. So John Anik instructed his fans in specific acts of violence against that umpire. Now think about that for a second. He went on his own social media platforms and he advocated for violence against athletic individuals, officials. And as of now, I know the UFC knows about it. I know the UFC could very easily be party to a lawsuit if someone takes John Anik up on that type of philosophy of vengeance with an MMA official. Since the precedent has already been set that he said it and no one did anything about it. And I think it's important we start to really think about that. I think it's important we start to think about what the administrators for MMA are allowing to happen if they don't defend their officials. Because it's always after the fact that we say we didn't see the signs, right? Even the Slenderman case, right? We didn't see the signs. Columbine, oh, we didn't see the signs. 9/11, we didn't see the signs. But these are the signs. These are the signs when you do not confront people who behave in a way that could lead to violence toward your officials, then you are making it less safe for your officials. As far as Rhonda is concerned, I can empathize with her 100% as far as how she feels and how it's affected her life. I don't personally feel anything other than empathy for my fellow officials and a desire to try to make things safer for them moving forward.
You've caught me off guard, actually, with the John Anik calling for violence. I actually don't know about it. You're talking about he said something. John Anik had made a joke, but it was a joke towards violence?
No, John Anik, on his own social media posts, advocated for violence against a AAA umpire who had somehow either thrown a player out of the game or something. And he not only advocated for violence, he advocated for particular acts of violence. He said, someone should knock this guy's teeth out. So he's not only instructing his followers in what he wants done, but the exact act. And again, that's a precursor to violence. Like, you'd have to agree with that. That's not a joke. That's a precursor to violence. That's a call to action for people who may or may not be unbalanced. What happens in 3 months if somebody knocks that umpire's teeth out?
Oh, yeah.
Because they want to get on John Anik's podcast. What do we do? Do we just give them new teeth and say, hey, you know, it's okay. That's John Anik. We need to stop it, or we need to confront it. And we need to say, this is wrong. And this makes it less safe for our officials. The administrators have done a fantastic job for fighter safety, right? Great job across the board. They really do. They work really hard at that. But they've neglected official safety when they allow coaches, corner men, media members, people like John Anik to say that if the officials don't follow their standards or how they feel something should have gone, they should have their teeth knocked out. If the administrators don't confront that issue, then they're not doing their job.
Have you ever felt the level of that? Like when you're in there, judge, I can see it with referees. I mean, as a fan, I can see it with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. As the crowd starts hemming and hawing, you mm-hmm. can see referee. You can see the human element. And it's really quite undeniable. That's okay. But I wonder, as judges, do you ever feel that when you're in a building and you know which way the crowd wants it to go? I mean, is there a part of you that has to fight that?
Overwhelmingly, I'll tell you the truth. Overwhelmingly, you know, if you want a genuine referendum on the job that the judges do in MMA, if you want to know how the fans really feel about the job that the judges do, all you have to do is look at the numbers. Usually they say 18,000, right? Usually when they're in an arena, they say 18,000 to 20,000, which means that the building's sold out, which means the fans have given the mandate of the masses to the officials and the judges that they know they're doing a good job. If you look at the pay-per-view numbers, if you look at the explosion in popularity of MMA, which has been meteoric, absolutely astonishing. The fans, the overwhelming majority of the fans, have no problem with the officiating, have no problem with the judging, have no problem with the administrators. That's why they keep buying tickets. If they had any problem with it, they'd stop buying tickets and they'd stop buying pay-per-views. But as you see, the opposite has happened. Right? The opposite of that has happened. Sure. There's more tickets sold all the time. And, you know, I'm not here to try to curry favor with anybody, but if you look at what Dana White did with the sport, they'll be writing about that in business textbooks in 50 years. They have no choice. It's just... The evidence is clear. It's also the evidence is clear that the officials do a great job, but there is an undercurrent that needs to be addressed, which makes the officials less safe. And we need to look at that before somebody gets hurt, not after somebody gets hurt.
On a personal level, our industry is rather small. You talk about 18,000 to 20,000 people, and it looks so glamorous on television, but the other side of it is we all get to the arena in one of two carloads in a big bus. We all see each other. Mm-hmm. We stay at the same hotels, largely the same airports. I mean, I only bring that to you. Like, I would imagine that fighters would attempt to curry favor in any way they could. Hello, Mr. Crosby, a smile, something small along these lines. But there really would be no way to avoid interacting or coming across a fighter or their camps. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems like there could be a conflict of interest. And I don't offer you a suggestion. I don't know if that needs to be disclosed, but I have seen that before. I have seen ring doctors that are associated with camps, just by example, or I've seen judges that have they're having dinner with the executive director, which is fine with me. I'm just sharing that would likely get more assignments. And it's one of those spots where, do you ever feel on a personal level, do you ever see that? Or do you ever feel somebody trying to do that with you and curry favor? If I was to be fair with you, back when I was a wrestler, I would see those referees and I called every damn one of them, sir.
Mm. Well, you know, I was the first person to start judging these fights. So I've kind of seen it all when it comes to the fighters. But, you know, for years, I thought it would be good for the fighters and for me as an official and as a judge to listen to what the fighters had to say and go to where the fighters go and listen to what they have to say, not talk a lot because they've got the administrators to explain anything they need to know about the rules, but to listen to what the fighters had to say and get a sense of how they feel about their own sport and their own journey within the sport and use that to be a better judge. But I would do that across the board. I would do that whenever and however I could on my own time, using my own money to get wherever I had to go to do it. In fact, Jill, you might not remember, but that's where I met you, because Randy and Matt were putting on events up in Oregon and asked me to come up and help set up a little something for them with as far as this before. You know, although there was a lot of administration, but try to set up an architecture to make sure that the judging and officialdom was done correctly. And that's where I met you. And if you remember correctly, I spent the entire time I was up there listening, not talking. And then I made some recommendations. So I did that for a long time. I generally don't do it anymore, because now if you want to know what the fighters think about anything, all you have to do is go to their Instagram page. Like, they've got perfect access to get their opinions out to people. They've got a perfect avenue for that. They don't need me there to listen to them. They just can put out whatever they feel about anything on Instagram. So the idea of going there and listening to the fighters has kind of become obsolete because of technology.
Sure. I do wonder about it from your perspective. Like, I guess I'll tell you why I asked maybe. I love the sport. Like, I mean, I'm a genuine fan. I started in 1993. Yeah, I was a junior in high school. And my career started as a fan, and that's where I am now. Like, that's how my time in the sport will end as a fan. And it's a hard sport to participate in. Like, if you're absolutely not in there throwing the punches and kicks, it's very hard to participate. So one way that you could participate is what you do with judging. So I will think of that sometimes. I will think and fantasize about maybe transitioning. I've seen Frank Trigg do it. I've seen Chris Lieben do it, just by example. And one thing that does stop my little fantasy is looking at my own career. One thing that kept me in the sport this darn long was I had something to fight about. Somebody would say something or somebody would do something. And I felt this urge that I must come out and defend myself. And sure, I feel as though that is taken. That is taken from our referees and judges, and perhaps it's for better than worse. Mm-hmm. I just notice it, and I would think it's personally frustrating. I've always wanted to ask you that. Is
well,
it?
Well, you were around pretty early, right? Does it appear to you, from my perspective, it appears that even though there were rivalries, even from the very beginning, when there was no real money to be made, there was a much greater sense of camaraderie and collegiality among everybody, officials, fighters, everything. And as the amount of money and the amount of attention, both of which are capital, both of which are income, whether it's financial income or narcissistic supply, the more of that becomes available, the more territorial sniping there is. Not just in MMA, but in any field, in my field, you know, the further along it progresses, the phenomenon progresses, the more money and prestige that are involved, the harder it is to remain impartial and not be involved in rivalries. So I personally have no rivalries with anybody in MMA, and I try to avoid them in my own business. But you can see how it happens. If there's only so much amount of money and so much amount of attention available, somebody's going to get it, somebody isn't. I think you'd make an awesome judge, though. I've talked to you about that in the past. I mean, if you put an application in and went and did the course, I think you'd be an awesome judge. I'm not trying to flatter you, but you've got a very agile mind and an absolutely comprehensive understanding of MMA. But remember, when you're a judge, you don't get paid for your travel days. You're not an employee, and you're not an independent contractor because there's no contract. You're just a gig worker, right? You're a gig worker, like somebody who drives for Grubhub.
Sure.
And that's, if you're comfortable enough with that, like I couldn't survive as an MMA official. I work in a business where I'm part of a guild. I get paid a certain amount of money based upon a guild. I get overtime and meal penalties and travel days and the residuals and a lot of things that are impossible in the MMA stuff. You know, what's kept me around as a judge for as long as it has is I do believe the journey the fighters are on, like you, and I want what's best for you. So I want to give my best effort to it for as long as I can.
Sure. Sure. I realize I'm hitting the same note a couple of times, but
go ahead.
I really appreciate that you come on. I've invited a number of judges. I invite a number of referees. They have 100% told me no, and I don't take it personal. I know that they tell everybody else no too.
Right.
But when I have you, I do find myself dancing around certain questions. Like, here would be an example. When you're judging, do you get assigned? I mean, do you put your name in and then you see if you get it, or you get a phone call, which turns into, hey, if you want the glamour shot for the big pay-per-views everyone talks about, you got to do the small shows down at the YMCA. Like, what is the inner workings of that? If you turn down an assignment, I can tell you as a fighter, if I say no to a match, I can't just expect that another call is going to come tomorrow with a different offer of a match. I'm going to go to the back of the line.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if your industry works that way. Like if judges, like what's that like to turn something down?
Well, there's a few things. Like from my own experience, every administrator has their own process for how they hire their officials. That's one of the things. Like there is no, it's not like there's a hiring hall that all the MMA officials go and sit in. Like a union, like a shape hall, like an old union where, you know, the administrator from Louisiana pokes his head in and says, I need three judges next week. And if the first three guys are the guys with the most seniority or the highest scores, well, we've already determined we don't know how those scores are come to. are given the assignment. Every administrator has their own way of doing that. So speaking for one of them would mean speaking for all of them, but I can't speak for all of them because I don't know. But there's some states where, you know, I won't work in certain states. I won't work in New Jersey. And the reasons I won't work in New Jersey have to do with philosophies I have that were very different from the philosophies of the administrator in New Jersey. So those administrators know not to call me, and I know not to expect an assignment from them.
Sure.
Like that's one fine example. Like I had serious issues with the way the New Jersey State Athletic Control Board was handling its obligation to the public trust in the state of New Jersey.
Douglas, let me ask you a question. Have I been a nice host today? Have I been thoughtful?
You always are. You're always a very nice guy. Don't just stop all of that.
Can I tell you why I asked that?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I want to ask you very badly what you disagree with in New Jersey. And here's my problem. One, I don't know if that's polite or not. And two, I'm out of time. I have you on a Zoom link that is counting down in front of me 58 seconds. If you come back on, may I ask you that question?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk to you about it. We could go over a couple of things. Remember, another thing we can talk about is John McCarthy.
Sure.
So let's make those two things. Because they're kind of interlinked, those two topics.
I'll tell you one thing. You brought up Jeremy Horn earlier. And Jeremy Horn is such a great name for me. Like, it was part of my past, but he was so good, Douglas. He was ranked number one in the world. On that list was Anderson Silva, was Dan Henderson, was Matt Lerner. I wasn't on the list. I was in the weight class. I wasn't even on the list. Horn was ranked number one. Mm-hmm. And Horn would fight on a Friday, and he would then be a passenger, and his buddy would drive him 8 hours to a different state, and he would fight then on Saturday on a car as well. And this was the coolest thing. I mean, this guy was doing like 14 matches a year. And I remember a time that you got assigned on a Friday and a Saturday, and there was people that were giving you a hard time, and John McCarthy defended you. He came out and said, hey, we don't pick the assignments, and I used to do that same thing. So you bring up Big John. Maybe we can tie in Horn, and you gave me permission the next time you come on, which is going to be next week, to straight up ask you what is going on in New Jersey. Is that fair? Do we have a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. Aren't you going to be there this weekend?
Yes. Are you going out this weekend?
I'm upstate working on a TV show right now. If I can get out of here. But getting out of here to go to that fight means putting that past the boss, which is Jen. And I have a very strong suspicion she's going to nix that real thing. So
sure.
You know what she's like, Phil.
I appreciate
her. She's up here working with us. Yeah,
she lined this up for me today. She refused to give me her number. Everything. She said I could send you a Zoom link. So here we are. What's up to Jen?
Oh, stop that. You know you can always call me.
I appreciate that.
Have fun. And
until next week.
I'll try to do this week. And if you want, take care.
Cutting out. Guys, Douglas Crosby, and he's given us permission to ask him what he meant about his disagreements with New Jersey. That's very interesting. I feel like I got to do that with white gloves, right? Like just out of respect. No, nobody's ever told me, hey, judges and referees can't come on and talk. But I've invited and asked numerous judges and referees to come on and talk, and they don't. I mean, I've been buddies with Chris Lieben from the day he started in the sport. When he started judging, he stopped coming on my show. So it's one of the things where, you know, you got to elect yourself the mayor of Get the Hintville and try to be respectful. But, right, there's a reason we're talking. There's things that I want to know. So if I was weak there, you guys, I apologize. I assure you, I am just warming up. We're going to get Douglas on. And the daggers will be a little more sharp, hopefully next week. Guys, enjoy your weekend. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.